questions in the reception area, apparently measuring my intentions, he extended me the courtesy of an interview. We shifted to a small office. Smart, relaxed, and engaging, he interviewed me for almost an hour. I gave him my resume, my college transcripts, and my contact information. He asked twice if my grade point average was, in fact, that high. I assured him that it was. He inquired about my overseas experiences. I told him the truth, all of it. He asked if I had broken any U.S. laws. I admitted to brushes with game wardens as a boy, suffering a couple of severe reprimands. Strapped into a 1969 GTO with 400 cubic inches of engine, I had participated in a few street drag races, but had never been caught by the police. There were some other traffic violations. I had discharged firearms in city limits. There were plenty of fistfights. There were a couple of naked streaking incidents, but again, I was never apprehended, much less indicted for anything. That was it. He asked if I had ever tried drugs. Never, I responded, adding that I even abstain from alcohol. He probably wondered about all my misadventures while sober. He asked why I wanted to join the CIA. I replied that I loved my country and wanted to serve, and this was the best way for me to contribute. I told him that as a boy I had written to the CIA. I had wanted to be a CIA operations officer. It was my life's dream. He was polite but offered no encouragement and no follow-up. I left thinking that the interview was better than another rejection letter. At least I had talked to a real CIA officer. I kept my hopes in check. This would probably take years. I would finish my graduate degree, learn a foreign language, travel some more, and reapply. Maybe I would go to Mexico and learn Spanish. Maybe I would go back to Southeast Asia. Maybe I would join the army, although I disliked the idea of wearing a uniform and adhering to rote routine order. The cutoff age for hiring a prospective CIA operations officer was 35, so I had plenty of time, although that age seemed so far away. It seemed so old. That night, the CIA called. They wanted me back the next week. They wanted another interview. "Holy shit," I muttered as I hung up the phone. I bounced around the room, pumped my fists in the air, and stifled a holler. After years of dreaming and preparing, I had a shot. 9 months later, after many interviews, tests, and a polygraph exam, I joined the CIA's clandestine service as a career trainee, CT, operations officer. I was 23. Chapter 2. Training. Experience and skill in the various particulars is thought to be a species of courage, whence Socrates also thought that courage was knowledge. Aristotle, Nicomachean Ethics, translation, J. A. Smith. I was the youngest in my CIA CT class, the least educated and the least experienced. I had no military service, no foreign language, no graduate degree, no technical skill, and no professional pedigree. I had started earnest manual labor at the age of 13. This included swinging a bush hook to clear survey lines in thick woods, digging ditches along hot asphalt roads, and hauling lumber at construction sites. I had tried and failed to play in a professional rugby league in Australia. I had brawled across four continents, and there were broken bones and missing teeth, my own and others. But I had no debilitating injuries and no criminal record. The CIA apparently figured this counted for something. I could read maps, navigate in the bush, survive in foreign lands, handle firearms, and work relentlessly. More important, I brought an ability and desire to learn, to manage high risks, and to serve my country in places uncertain and remote. My CIA trainee class comprised more than 30 U.S. citizens who had recently been students, soldiers, businessmen, policemen, lawyers, and bureaucrats. After many months of background investigations, tests, and interviews, we had cleared the threshold. We were CTs in the CIA's clandestine service, the espionage arm of the United States of America. We worked for the Director of Central Intelligence, who worked for the President. I wondered how we would fare during the next 18 months of training. Who would be certified for an overseas clandestine assignment? I was confident, fueled by my determination to excel among these older, more experienced, more polished trainees. This confidence was reinforced by my courage to explore my own ignorance and to learn. The sense of adventure tantalized me. I wondered about many things, but never thought that I would fail. I also never imagined that my CT classmates would embody such extremes of heroic patriotism and felonious betrayal. One was Edward Lee Howard, who defected to the Soviet Union and exposed loyal CIA foreign agents, Russians who were captured, tried, bound, and then shot in the back of the head. He also provided his Soviet handlers the names and his assessments of classmates, including me. This was underscored years later when I read a classified document the KGB had given a foreign security service, a service that the CIA had penetrated. Our source, with undisguised glee, handed me the KGB paper late one night during a brief encounter on a desolate lane. The memo, which I read later that evening after I had swapped cars and made it home, identified me as a CIA officer. The KGB had warned the Foreign Intelligence Service that I was dangerous and should be watched. I was not surprised, but nevertheless slightly unnerved to see my name on a KGB memo. After a moment's reflection, I was flattered. Another classmate was Steve Kappas, a strapping, balding, bespectacled ex-college football player who had studied forensic pathology and then served 5 years as a U.S. Marine Corps officer. Steve exercised disciplined leadership from day one. He would lead CIA field operations in war. He would help convince Gaddafi to forsake Libya's nuclear weapons program. He would eventually rise to the top of the clandestine service, resign on principle, and return as deputy director of the CIA. Steve remains one of my friends and confidants. Soon after we began, the same team of medical and mental health experts who scrubbed us during the agency's assessment hiring process provided feedback. Steve and I shared the shrink's findings with each other. Steve exhibited the perfect psychological profile of a case officer, moderately extroverted, sharply analytical, with a balanced sense of risk. He also valued and respected the chain of command. I did not conform to the profile. I fell into the quasi-introverted, deeply intuitive, unconventional, semi-rebellious category on the shrink's chart. I harbored antipathy for authority, but valued loyalty to those whom I served. It was a weird combination. They assured me, however, that I fell within their highly scientific bounds of acceptability. According to them, my scores indicated modest professional prospects. I always wondered what Edward Lee Howard's profile looked like. Our initial orientation was conducted in a classroom in a nondescript suburban Virginia office building. The instructors were also nondescript. I cannot remember any of them. I do recall the many forms we completed and the organizational charts we memorized. I also remember one lecture with a slideshow illustrating foreign weapon systems posed side by side with U.S. equivalents. The depictions were remarkably similar, because foreign spies had stolen the U.S. plans. The lecturer described various examples of known foreign espionage against the United States, and even more worrisome, the unexplained loss of various secrets to foreign powers. This launched an unending and vital theme throughout the training and my career: the need to know, the need to compartmentalize, and the need to validate intelligence and its sources. These introductory security and counterintelligence briefings laid the foundations of my espionage education. Each CT could bid on interim assignments, lasting several weeks to several months, in the various geographic or functional divisions within the clandestine service, also known as the Directorate of Operations. This served as a quick, on-the-job introduction to the components where eventually each of us would be based. I had traveled through Southeast Asia and loved the place, so I asked for an assignment to this branch. As raw CT rookies, knowing almost nothing about the business at hand, we served as basic office grunts. It was a great opportunity, however, a peek into real-life